Donatos has been part of my life for a long time. And fun fact, it was my very first job when I was 15. I still remember those shifts, learning how everything worked, and honestly just loving the environment. And of course, the pizza. So it's kind of surreal now that all of these years later, it's become our family's go-to for pizza. And in this season of life with kids and full days, I just really value things that are easy and, most importantly, consistent. And that's Donatos for us. I know when we order it, it's going to be good, everyone's going to be happy, and dinner just feels taken care of. Lately, we've been loving their $5 Pizza Pals menu. So when you order a large pizza, you can add on all these $5 items, subs, wings, salads, even desserts, so I can mix and match depending on what everyone's in the mood for. It just makes dinner feel simple, a little more fun, and honestly, those are the kind of rhythms I'm always trying to create in our home. Donatos, gotta love more.
I'm truly here to help people who are boxing themselves into a corner rather than setting themselves free through their work, through their passions, through their motherhood, and helping them to find what they really want, which is peace and authenticity and happiness. He said, essentially what you're describing is it looks gold, but it's not. It's gilded. It's shiny, but it isn't truly glittery from within. Not only does not all the glitters actually feel like gold, but it many times traps us as well. You cannot deal with the reality as it is. So you're trying to numb your way out of the shame of admitting that you've done everything right and you've not gotten the results that you really want. All overconsumption and all underconsumption are motivated by shame. We lie because we are well-socialized animals. It's that simple. In other words, I will not tell you how I prefer to eat my eggs because I'd rather not be a bother. Doing the inner work, the inner journey is the best trip I ever took in my life. I can't recommend it enough.
What if the success you worked so hard for is actually what's holding you back? Karen Eldad, also known as Coach Karen, is a globally recognized executive coach here today to reveal the hidden costs of high performance, from burnout and perfectionism to chasing external validation. With empathy and sharp insight, she unpacks the gilded cage that traps achievers, showing how success can feel hollow without authenticity and purpose. Through Karen's candid stories and reflection, she offers a path to break free from overachievement and redefine success on your own terms. This episode is a wake-up call for anyone ready to trade the illusion of more for the freedom of enough. This podcast is made possible by the sponsors of the show. If any of these week's sponsors pique your interest, please check them out. But as I always say, if you don't need it, it's not a good deal. And if you've been enjoying the transition from minimalist moms to clear intentions, let me know. I'd love to hear your insights. Leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to this podcast. I read every word that you all leave me in the reviews, and I always appreciate your thoughtfulness and hearing how the show has impacted you throughout your life. This is also a great way for the show to continue to gain visibility with others that are looking to live a life with more intention. And with that, let's get into this conversation with Karen Eldad. I'm so excited to talk about your new book. It's called Gilded, Breaking Free from the Cage of Ambition, Perfectionism, and the Relentless Pursuit of More. Before we get into the conversation, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners, and then we'll start.
My name is Coach Karen. I insist people call me that, by the way. And I've been an executive coach and professional speaker for 8 years now. Gilded is a book that I've compiled based on not only my experience of transcending the world of perfectionism and overwhelm and unchecked ambition into the spiritual realm, which, by the way, is a realm of clarity, is a realm of a newfound minimalism, which is why I've resonated so often with your message and why I love so much the conversion into this natural extension of your podcast. That's really what I'm about. I'm truly here to help people who are boxing themselves into a corner rather than setting themselves free through their work, through their passions, through their motherhood, and helping them to find what they really want, which is peace and authenticity and happiness.
Yes, absolutely. The title of the book, Gilded, where did that come from?
My husband. I don't like giving him credit for good ideas, Diane, but he does have one every once in a while. And he was saying what you're really describing is a gilded cage. When I kept talking to him about the ongoing struggle, forgive me, of the perfectionist, the ongoing struggle of the very successful person, the ongoing struggle of the ambitious, of the desirous, of the excellent, he said, essentially what you're describing is it looks gold, but it's not. It's gilded. It's shiny, but it isn't truly glittery from within. And as a result of that, the analogy of the gilded cage, there's a big gilded cage on the cover of my book, is very apt. Not only does not all the glitters actually feel like gold, but it many times traps us as well. That's why it's become the dominant metaphor of the book.
Yes. And I think that most of the people that are going to listen to this episode are seeking that balance and, most importantly, peace. And there's so many, especially for moms, there's so many things that we're juggling. The mental load is overwhelming. I tried to explain what the mental load is to my husband because I know he works really hard too, but I'm like, there's just little details that I have to keep track of.
You know, the crux of what you just said is not in the have so many balls to juggle. It's the that I have to keep track of. That's what's really moving you. It's the obligation to keep track of these things without giving that lovely man, who I'm sure is capable, the ability to step in and to help. What really happened in my life was I actually collapsed under the responsibilities, the very basic responsibilities. Let's talk about them, of all women: to stay super thin, to always look nice, to behave very nicely, to have the right job, to maintain that right job, to never be rude at that night job, to be married to a tall man, which, as we all know, should be the apotheosis of all of our desires, and to do things all correctly. Check, 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 check. I have to. I have to. Until one day, at the age of 33, I think, or 32, who knows? It was my early 30s. I was in a shower listening to ABBA's only sad song, My Love, My Life, and thinking that my only way out of this life that felt like a giant trap, that was miserable to me, was suicide.
Wow.
An overachiever. I've since learned that it's extremely common for those of us who are so aggressive with ourselves to literally think such aggressive thoughts for ourselves. It's common, it's normal, it's natural. But back then I thought, how is somebody who's done everything right, who is keeping track of all those details, just like you, my friend, how could I have gotten it so wrong? And the problem was in the having to keep track of all those details, which was literally making me super hard on myself and work a little extra hard on everything else. Mm. I've come a long way since then. It's been many years, but that's really what I'm here to talk about.
Yeah, and maybe some people can't necessarily resonate with suicide, but I think a lot of people are disassociating with life these days. They're numbing out.
That's right. They are numbing out. And by the way, I like to say the impulse is similar. 7 hours of scrolling, alcoholism, workaholism, by the way, shoppingism. Shopping is not a recognized addiction, but numbing in that pattern is 100% a numbing pattern. And essentially what you're doing is you're checking out because you cannot deal with the reality as it is. So you're trying to numb your way out of the shame of admitting that you've done everything right and you've not gotten the results that you really want. If that's resonating even a tiny bit with anybody out there, I want you to lean into this and just let yourself sit with it, explore it, listen to people like me. It's okay. We don't need to invent problems where there are none. But if you have been feeling restless or aimless or bored or really resentful for no reason and are engaged in numbing patterns, you may want to check this out. I'm just saying.
Oh, you made me think of something. Oh, okay. So we find ourselves in these cycles to where we end up getting burnout. And obviously, we don't necessarily, well, I guess some of us do things that don't feel good. But to me, I'm like, burnout happens for me because I'm getting that external validation.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I can do it. I can manage it. I can keep going. So how do we, I guess, tune out that external validation and break the cycle of this gilded cage that we bear?
Burnout happens because you're doing too little of what lights you up and too much of what lights other people up, which means you've become a validation junkie instead of a Diane junkie. And the only way out of this is to become a Diane junkie. In other words, to go all in on yourself. Let's think about how hard this is for women, how hard this is for mothers. Are you conditioned to think about yourself first?
Probably not.
No, of course not.
Kind of selfish though, Karen.
I mean, first of all, I applaud that. And secondly, why do you think they have to remind us to put our oxygen mask on first on the plane? They have to remind us, not because they want all the babies to die, but because they know that the babies will die if we forget to put our oxygen mask on first, because it is our natural impulse, or I'd rather counter that by saying it is our conditioning to do so. So your only bet of getting out of this is to do something that is relatively counterintuitive, which is to be quote unquote selfish. And I have to say, I counter that as well. I don't believe that it's selfish to take care of me because I have to take care of me in order to take care of you. If I am sacrificing myself, I'm not really taking care of you. I'm not really loving you. I'm not really present. I can't live that way. So I've learned to really, really care about me, to become very curious about what I love, to become very curious about what I prefer, and to become much more open about what I like and what I would rather have in any given moment. Before, if you asked me, Karen, what would you like for dinner? I would say, oh, I'm fine with just anything. And then I'd freak out when somebody offered me meat. Today, I'm like, I'm a vegetarian. So just so you know, stay in that family, please.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not apologetic about it. And it makes it easier, actually. It makes it seamless to interact with people.
Mm-hmm. When I became a mom, I was of the mindset that these children were coming into an established family of me and my husband.
Yeah.
And so I've always had that in the back of my mind. And so while even just laying in bed last night, I was like, they're my life. I love my children. I'm so grateful for this season. At some point, they're going to leave and I'm going to be alone with my husband and with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always kind of just prioritized self in a sense that maybe appears as narcissistic and or...
Appears. That's the word. So Okay. Luckily for you, I happen to have grown up in the 80s. And in the 80s, we joined our parents' lives. Basically, everything changes in around 1984. There are wonderful books, by the way, about literally the changing of parenting. One of them is Coddling of the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt. And the other one is Raising an Adult by Susie Walcott something. She has two last names. Very, very wonderful books that posit that essentially in the beginning of the 80s, when one kidnapping happens and one kid falls down the well, American parenting goes bananas. And essentially starts to turn into what is now known as the helicopter parent, which has since, as you know, evolved or devolved into the bulldozer parent. By contrast, 80s parenting, you would think of my parents not only as narcissists, but heathens, people who literally did not care where I was 90% of the time. And yet, amazingly, I am a fully functioning adult who has done very well in life and whose parents are still remarkably, perhaps even too close to her. How did that happen?
Yeah.
It's not a fluke. I believe that the idea that I joined their life has been very, very useful to me. Now, of course, we have developed some wonderful emotional tools since then, and those are wonderful. I'm not saying go back to 1984 parenting. It's awesome. I'm just saying there are components there that are very useful, and here's why they're useful to your children. Number one, they're useful to your children because they do not enable your children. They allow them to be the superstars that they are. And number two, they give children freedom, which is something that children really, really need. Not only do they need it for their development, they truly crave it. For you, however, it also gives you the most important things. Number one, the ability to be happy in your marriage. How important do you think that is for your kids? You know, my parents are still married. I think it has something to do with the fact that we joined their life and they didn't join our life. My parents lived for themselves. They had full careers. How important is that to their life? I'm pretty sure that even though this is simply correlational, it is not causal data. I'm not citing a research study here. I'm talking to you about experience. I think that these things are probably evidently correlated and provable in other examples. So why don't you think of this not as narcissism, but literally as good reason, as well-functioning, as the ability to defy society, which brings me to the most important thing about Gilded. Mm-hmm. Gilded, the only reason we become Gilded or we move into a Gilded cage is because we conform so much to the ideas of society, to the cultural ideas of our time, that it starts to box in all of our preferences and our authentic self. I don't care what your authentic self is, as long as it's authentic to you, because other than that, you're not living with real freedom. So instead of calling it narcissistic, which, by the way, is inherently toxic, narcissism is usually malevolent or malignant. Instead, just think of yourself as a person who is truly drawn to serve your family and to serve in your partnership in a way that is much more authentic and liberating to you. And if others do it a different way and it works for them, that's super cool. Make sense?
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. And I'll be sure to link both those books in the show notes. I do remember that I think it's Free Range Kids, Lindsay talks about. It's the guy that created America's Most Wanted.
Yes, exactly. That's what happened. And essentially, we all started freaking out. And I remember my mom starting to like look around the mall, worried that someone was going to kidnap me. And I'm like, there's no one here, Mom.
Yeah.
We're JCPenney.
Yeah, statistically, it's very unlikely. And yet we are operating out of so much fear. And I think we just know way too much. But going back to that's a different conversation. I want to go back to the self, burnout. And you talk about something, I don't even know if I'm going to pronounce it right, the Faustian bargain.
Yeah. Faustian bargain is a very elitist and erudite term that I love throwing around in dinner parties so people think I'm much smarter than I am. It alludes to the play Dr. Faustus, The Devil and Dr. Faustus, which was written by Christopher Marlowe. Christopher Marlowe, just so you know, is the guy that Shakespeare ripped off for all of his ideas. famously, so goes the theory. And the Faustian bargain, the bargain that Dr. Faustus makes with the devil is, I will give you my life and you will make me a star. That is many times what we're trying to do. The reason we acquiesce to other people's preferences is because we believe we'll get something out of it. When I chose a job, a career that was not in alignment with my soul, my former life was as a chief executive in a big luxury company. I wanted title, I wanted prestige, and I wanted safety. I didn't want what Karen wants to do naturally for a living, which P.S. is this. When Karen married the first guy, I love telling people he's dead, but we're just divorced.
Okay.
I married tall guy who looks right on Instagram and who is available for marriage. So I wanted safety and I wanted prestige and I wanted marriage, right? But I wasn't asking for someone who was aligned with my soul, who was truly the preference of my soul, who was right for me. Shockingly, these two came to an untimely end and a very big crash that I describe in my book. But years later, when I did have the courage to start looking for golden and not gilded, for real and not phony baloney, I ended up with Ryan, the handsomest man in all of America from the great state of North Dakota. Who knew, by the way? It's always the last place you look. Am I right?
Right.
And I ended up with a career that makes me, I hope I never die. That's what you really, really want around here. You know, completely different relationships, completely different career, just a different, remarkable time here in this life.
So good. Okay. I knew none of that about Bastian, but now I will use that at dinner parties as well.
Yeah. People are going to really respect you.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about high performers missing the mark. And you just said, like, I guess you kind of explained that for yourself. And I'm glad that you did, because I wanted to go back to that moment in the shower and ask what you were doing at that point in time that felt so overwhelming. But I mean, actually, let's go back to that moment.
Yeah.
What got you to this point? I mean, you had to pull yourself up in some manner.
I think it was the grace of God, frankly. And I really can't attribute it to anything else, because I knew none of this when I decided to yank myself out of that shower. But I can explain what happened, and I can explain what happened later. What happens to most overachievers, and let me be clear, overachiever does not mean person who has amazing grades and is an Olympic athlete or anything you think, or is Jeff Bezos. An overachiever is a person who is intensely focused in a certain direction, also known as a perfectionist. Almost everyone listening to this has some obsessive tendencies, for sure. And as a result, is quite harsh with themselves. Mm-hmm. When we're very harsh with ourselves, we tend to take things out on ourselves first. That's where suicidal ideation comes from. Mm-hmm. It's a spiraling out of over-harshness with the self. Mm-hmm. And I hate to break it to you, it happens to everyone. I mean, it really is extraordinarily common. I've been a suicide counselor for a very long time. This is very, very common. Even if it doesn't spiral all the way to the ideation, like, here's how I'm going to do it, here's what the means are, we many times think checking out will be easier than dealing with all of these problems or the depth of this hole. Mm-hmm. In that moment, however, I couldn't see my way out, but I could see one thing clearly, and it was, this ends now. Mm-hmm. I remember the only thing that was crystal clear in my head as I got out of the shower was, we're done. No. It was like a visceral no with all my body. And from there, I started to understand that pretty much everything around me was going to come to an end. I initiated divorce. I cleared all of my stuff out of the house. I started moving back home to New York City. And that's also when I start collecting self-help books and listening to weirdos like me speaking on podcasts, which I have to tell you, because I'm rather academic or institutional in my tendencies, I really ignored. Like, I wasn't even going to listen to Tony Robbins. I was like, no thanks, I'm good.
Yeah.
But this is when all the books appear, the podcasts appear, the self-help appears, the coaching appears. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. No, I'm a big believer in the power of conversation for personal growth. So I've always really enjoyed podcasts because as you're hearing two people process, it just kind of gives you this, it just gives you an insight. It's that fly on the wall that we always want to be into two people's dynamics. So especially if you're getting someone that seems really authentic that you're listening to.
I totally agree. I think there are two things that are happening. The first is not a lot of people are having deep conversations anymore. Like, when was the last time you picked up the phone? If somebody's calling me, I literally assume they're dying because I don't understand why they want to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. The second thing that's happening is, technically, if somebody's listening to this conversation and resonating, it's not you and me having the conversation. It's them having a conversation with us. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so wonderful about these things, isn't it? Mm-hmm. While you're doing God's work here, Diane.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I feel like I'm an oversharer. So deep conversations are something that I don't have room in my life for people that don't want to have deep conversations at this point. So
yeah, it's a wonderful thing. There's a new book by Charlemagne the God, and it's basically the entire premise is you're either going to have a deep conversation or get out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I'm writing that down. All right. What else do we want to talk about? Leadership. Let's talk about leadership and how we can use this insight from the other side and becoming a better leader for our communities?
Well, there are three things that come to mind. The first is the audacity to lead, particularly for women, to become the leading lady. Many of us do not enjoy casting ourselves in this role. That's where all imposter syndrome comes across. And, you know, we are more susceptible to it than men slightly, although I have yet to meet the exception to the universe. And as a result, you don't even want to take the mantle onto you. But if you think about it, you are the leader of your life, you are the leader of your household, and you are, in many cases, the leader of your team or of your business. So leadership is exercised in many, many ways. So I think that the first thing about leadership that needs to be clear is being okay with being a leader, being complete with your deserving and your availability for that role. And I have to tell you, that took me quite some time. I remember it took a book, another book. I'm sorry, everybody, for so many recommendations to make me think this way. It was a book by Mindy Kaling. It's called Why Not Me?
Yeah, I remember that book.
Because I remember thinking, like everybody else, the thought I'd been struggling with all my life, which is why me?
Yeah.
What's special about me? I don't deserve to lead. Mm-hmm. And then I went, wait a minute. Don't I? And so that's the first thing that allows you to step fully into the role. Mm-hmm. Again, authenticity versus inauthenticity. Inauthenticity is the conditioning of society. You shouldn't lead. You're bossy. It's gross. It's aggressive. It's dominating. Come on. Be one of those nice people on the sidelines. Those are the people that are really nice at a dinner party. Or be what you really are, which is a person who cares about something and knows some stuff and can actually help set the strategic vision and steer this ship, whether it's your family or your workplace or your community, in the direction of peace and happiness and excitement. And that brings me to the second thing, which is leadership is not about you anyway. Leadership is about them. Whenever I coach leaders, they always tell me, this is so cute, Diane, I live for other people. I'm here to contribute beyond myself. And then I use an assessment known as DISC and motivators. Okay. And we see pretty clearly, pretty quickly, that they are actually very into recognition, being seen as the leader, and titles, and the hierarchical view of the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is usually where all the problems come from. The hogging of credit, the inability to take criticism, the inability to manage change, and the inability to truly inspire people, because what you're really using is respect or fear rather than love and connection and collaboration, which will take you much, much farther. In order to do that, you must also recognize not only that you have the audacity to lead, but that the true calling to lead is the calling to serve other people, to truly serve them, not to basically drag them on you. And I think when people can reframe these things, once again, they're undoing the Faustian bargain. Their soul is no longer susceptible to payouts. and to dangling carrots that will help them sell other people out. Mm-hmm. And then they become just much more warm and collaborative and last a lot longer, frankly.
Ever walk into a store and have no idea what wine to get? Yeah, I've been there too. However, I've stopped wasting time at the grocery store staring at the giant wall of wine, not knowing what to pick. Instead, have turned to Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a service that directly connects you to the world's finest independent winemakers so you can get award-winning wine delivered straight to your door. Use my code MINIMALIST for the code and password at nakedwines.com and get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I had some friends over last weekend and opened up a delicious 2021 Matt Parrish Merlot from Napa Valley. It was absolutely delicious, and you can't beat the price point. Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs and markups, winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality. Now is the time to join the Naked Wines community. Head to nakedwines.com/minimalist, click enter voucher, and put in my code MINIMALIST for both the code and password for 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off your first 6 bottles at nakedwines.com/minimalist and use the code and password MINIMALIST for 6 bottles of wine for $39.99.
How do you, as Coach Karen, make sure that you maintain healthy boundaries, I'm putting that in quotes, but healthy boundaries with always, I guess, I don't want to say directing people, but encouraging people. Like, you have to stay mindful of not overdoing it yourself now that you've stepped into this new role.
Oh yeah. Martyr syndrome. It's a sickness. And I think coaches suffer from it enormously, right? Because we really want to help. There were two things that corrected this for me. The first was the realization on the suicide hotline that the second I really, really pity them, I lost. I can't help you anymore. I've gone down with the ship. In other words, my job is to stay at the edge of the problem and not be dragged into the problem, because if I'm dragged into the problem, I can't help you anymore. So the boundary has to be a boundary of truly respecting you and seeing you as a superstar and knowing my own limits with this. The second thing that really changed my understanding of boundaries was my conviction around and my deep belief in the work of Brené Brown. And that's really the embrace of honesty as kindness. Instead of thinking that if I was ever honest with people, I would force them into a corner and they're going to hate me, and therefore I should just sugarcoat things, I learned to not do that anymore and to literally make the decision to tell them the truth regardless of consequences to myself. I was going to do what's right. I was not going to do what's convenient for me. And that's where everything really started to change.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to do. I mean, that's hard.
Extremely, extremely. Because we all want everybody to like us, right?
Yeah. Now you're talking about people pleasing, getting into people pleasing at the detriment of what we know is aligned.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything we haven't hit on that you want to talk about? I know your book is a wealth of information here. It goes into a much deeper dive than we are going to, but
I wanted to share that as you look at the table of contents, you might find the structure familiar. The structure is quite unusual for coaching, and it's a methodology that follows Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very similar, because I wanted to originally call this book, before Ryan came up with a brilliant title, I wanted to call it Workaholics Anonymous or Mamaholics Anonymous or Obsessaholics Anonymous. And essentially what we really want you to start with is just the understanding that you can admit that not everything in your life feels as good as it looks on Instagram. And without that, you're not going anywhere. We're just going to sound annoying to you. But if you can come to that real admission that things could be better and I'd like them to be better, they can be. And then you're going to be taken on a journey that will step by step help you to recover yourself. It'll walk you home. That's what we really want to do here, to the point where hopefully by the end of the book, you are okay with challenges. You welcome them. You're ready for them because you know who you are and you know how strong you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I love chapter 9, accept yourself, liberate yourself. And chapter 8 was right before that, to really live on purpose, really stop lying. And I often tell people that in regards to, if I'm talking about decluttering, I'm like, be honest with yourself and your habits that you've created. Because if you just lie to yourself, you're going to continue to be in those bad habits and you're never going to move the needle. But if you can say, yeah, I made a mistake. Yeah, I consumed, well, you could use this as food too. I've consumed too much, but now I'm going to move forward. That's not who I want to be. But you have to accept it, acknowledge it, and not allow shame to be down.
That's absolutely right. And you know, again, all over consumption and all under consumption are motivated by shame and by fear. This is why minimalism and essentialism is such a magnificent practice. You truly have to become honest with what is serving you, what is a necessity versus what is not. This has become a really, really mindful process in my life. And actually, because after my divorce, one of the bad things that happened to me, and there was a tsunami of them, was I lost all of my belongings in a fire. I had accumulated lots of status accoutrements, you know, a lot of Prada to make myself look really, really good in society. And all of it disappeared in a fire. Wow. And I remember that as a moment of extraordinary liberation because they were all lies. They were all just lies. And today I think I need to wear clothes and I need to look presentable, but there's really no need for me to pull myself into debt or to move myself into a situation where this is literally like the bane of my existence in order to move. That's one form in which we lie. And the problem with lies is that you have to maintain them. Like even a tiny lie, like for example, if I said to you, I'm 27, there could be some silly person out there who believed me. Mm-hmm. But then I'd have to remember that I said that. And I'd have to show up at every dinner party. And every time I throw myself a birthday party, keeping track of the lie. It starts to consume you. It starts to literally run your life. And so to really break free, to get to our preferences, we have to find where we're lying.
Why do you think people lie?
We lie because we are well-socialized animals. It's that simple. In other words, I will not tell you how I prefer to eat my eggs because I'd rather not be a bother. I'd rather you like me and actually associate me with a positive image that I'm trying to maintain. We're just well-socialized creatures primarily. Ultimately, then we start to essentially use lies to maintain a self-image, to maintain an identity, and to hold in position our gilded facade. But if you stop lying, you start finding something way better than rusty old, covered in gold garbage. You start finding real gold. You start allowing yourself to be exactly what you are without embellishment. And you also start to allow other people, therefore, to be what they are without embellishment. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I was just going to say fear. I mean, you elaborated on it. To me, lies come out of fear of being found out. You're afraid of the other person's reaction. You don't want to disappoint. Even something as silly as sending back drink or a meal at a restaurant. To me, I'm always, if I'm going to pay for something outside of my home, because usually I can create something equally as good at home.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if I'm going to pay for service, I want to get it right.
Yeah.
And it's not rude. Your tone can be rude. Maybe you work on your tone, but it's not rude to have a preference and to state it.
You don't have to tell them it's absolute piss. But
no.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And the fear is they won't like me or they will judge me. There will be a consequence. And a lot of people, unfortunately, this can translate in the leadership realm into something known as ethical fading. Ethical fading is when we don't just lie. We make severe compromises with our ethics because we really are afraid of looking bad in the eyes of others. The best example ever is Bernie Madoff. You know, I watched that amazing 4-part series on Netflix, Bernie Madoff, The Monster of Wall Street, thinking I knew everything there was to know about that scandal, and I knew nothing. I highly recommend it if you haven't watched it. Do you know how the whole thing started? The whole thing started, he had a legit operation. And in that legit operation, he lost something like 30 grand that a couple of investors from his family had put into the business. He was so afraid of telling them that he lost money and of looking like a loser, being found out, being seen as a loser, that he decided to lie to them and began a Ponzi scheme that then took down half the financial world. I mean, it's a truly astounding thing. People make very, very sloppy decisions when they make a decision to tell a tiny lie. Yeah. And this is one of my hopes. My hope is not to convince you that you're going to turn, God forbid, no one's going to turn into Bernie Madoff. But my hope is to convince people that lying is in and of itself such a terrible trap that you're much better off facing the music and getting through it so that you can start to live free.
That's so good. Well, is there any other word of wisdom here you want to leave at the end? That was excellent, but any other final word you want to leave before we wrap up?
My final word is, I guess, to say that if this resonated with you at all, chase the rabbit down the hole. It's really worth your while. Doing the inner work, the inner journey is the best trip I ever took in my life. I can't recommend it enough. I truly hope that it serves everybody out there. And I really thank you for having such a profound and important conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Karen, where can listeners find you, connect with you online, and grab a copy of your book?
They can find me on CoachKaren.com. That's not a Karen. It's K-E-R-E-N. And on Coach Karen on Instagram. And they can get a copy of the book wherever books are sold. It's just called Gilded. Or, of course, on BreakFreeWithGilded.com.
Awesome. Before I let you go, I asked my guests one final question here at the end. And it is, what does it mean to you to live a life with clear intentions?
To live a life with clear intentions is to live a life with integrity, to really know who you are, and to only offer from there the truth. That, to me, is what clarity is all about.
So good. Karen, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. A real pleasure.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links or resources related to everything discussed today, check out the show notes in your podcast window. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends or on social media is so helpful and will encourage others as they set out to pursue a life with clear intentions. Donatos has been part of my life for a long time, and fun fact, it was my very first job when I was 15. I still remember those shifts, learning how everything worked, and honestly just loving the environment, and of course, the pizza. So it's kind of surreal now that all of these years later, it's become our family's go-to for pizza. And in this season of life with kids and full days, I just really value things that are easy and, most importantly, consistent, and that's Donatos for us. I know when we order it, it's going to be good, everyone's going to be happy, and dinner just feels taken care of. Lately, we've been loving their $5 Pizza Pals menu. So when you order a large pizza, you can add on all of these $5 items, subs, wings, salads, even desserts, so I can mix and match depending on what everyone's in the mood for. It just makes dinner feel simple, a little more fun, and honestly, those are the kind of rhythms I'm always trying to create in our home. Donatos, gotta love more.